Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be taking calls on important health issues. Issues that you would like to see addressed, have addressed, or are in the process of seeking additional input. And I'll give you our number. And for the time being, please understand that only the people out of the tri-state New York area can call in. Unless, of course, you're listening on a satellite system or computer system somewhere, in which case anyone can call in at 212-209-2900. I believe that's the number, and I'm going to ask Michael, our engineer, if that is the correct number.
That is correct, Gary.
Thank you, Michael. That's 212-209-2900. Let's go to some of the latest in health and nutrition update information, and then we'll come back to see what are the issues that you find important. This comes from the Associated Press. Thank you, Johnny Asia, for sending this to me. A frustrating development in the battle against drug-resistant bacteria. Scientists report the first entirely new type of antibiotic in 35 years has been beaten by the staph supergerm a little more than a year after being introduced. Researchers at Harvard Medical School describe in the Lancet Medical Journal this week how an 85-year-old man on dialysis came down with a staph infection in the lining of his intestines that was not vulnerable to the new drug, Zyvox. It is the first report of staph resistance to medicine. Experts said that while the finding is disappointing, it isn't surprising. They have learned to expect the unpredictable from crafty bacteria, and the drug still should be able to help many people. According to Dr. Mary Jane Ferraro, it's a heads up that you have to keep an eye on it. Director of Microbiology at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, who found the resistant strain. It was only a matter of time, whether or not it's going to become prevalent or whether this is going to be a rare thing we can't predict. Staphylococcus aureus is considered the most successful of all bacteria germs because it produces such a wide range of infections in so many people. It is the leading cause of infections acquired in hospitals worldwide and causes ailments ranging from boils and urinary tract infections to toxic shock syndrome and pneumonia. Half of all staph that circulates in hospitals is resistant to meticillin, the standard drug used to treat it. Now it is developing resistance to the main reserve drug, the antibiotic vancomycin. Now, I'll give you a perspective on this. It was in one of the very first shows that I broadcast on WBAI that I did a report from Philadelphia, where I'd gone down there because a person who was working at that time as a FDA food inspector was very concerned about how livestock were being fed. And at that time, they were trying to give antibiotics in large doses to cattle and chickens for no other reason than because it allowed them to gain weight faster. This had originally been discovered by Thomas Jukes out at UCLA. Now, what happened from there was that the pharmaceutical industries began to see, a very lucrative market. The cattle industry saw less feed, quicker growth, more profit. No one wanted to take a heads up at that time to say, well, what will this do in the cattle or chickens or pigs? No one cared. As a result, for the next 25 years, we have used more than 50% of all antibiotics produced in the United States on livestock. Now, let me give you an example of a human being. And an animal is really not a whole lot different, except it has a shorter lifespan and generally a metabolism that is far more susceptible because it lives in a contained environment. Where a human being is exposed to many different factors, you can, if you choose, have juices, eat organic produce, get to the country, breathe fresh air. Not so in industrial farming. So imagine this. Imagine that I started giving you, at the age of 16, a handful of antibiotics, penicillin, every single day. Each of those tablets contained 500 milligrams. You would start to gain weight. Your metabolism would shift. Now, what would happen is the first time you got an infection, your body would react to it differently. And then your body would be on full alert, and then the side effects of the antibiotic itself would depress the immune system. That would make it easier for otherwise easily destroyed microbes, bacteria, that had lived for centuries in the human gut, like E. coli and like strep and staph in the throat and the intestine. It would allow these otherwise harmless or relatively harmless bacteria, providing they're in the body and don't get reinfected in this, to be killed. Not so when you start giving it antibiotic after antibiotic, because what's going to happen is first time you give it, it's going to wipe them out, most of them. The few that remain, because of a pleomorphic energy concept, begin to, in the most unique of evolutionary patterns, they instantaneously seek a way to change their environment so that the environment is no longer as hostile and they can survive. This single-celled organism is able to do what a human being cannot. It can adapt very quickly in a matter of days, hours, to what we couldn't in five generations. Now that bacteria that was almost all killed, now the next time around it starts to proliferate, and every time you eat any sugar at all, including carrot juice, it just goes in onto a feeding rampage and begins to multiply disproportionate to anything you've ever seen. Now the good bacteria that normally reside in the gut are fighting the bad bacteria, and where normally the good bacteria would maintain a dominant position, the penicillin you've been taking has wiped out all the good bacteria. The good bacteria don't come back. The bad bacteria, few do. The few that come back have an ability to fight this this antibiotic. You take more antibiotics. Again, you kill off 95%. The 5% that survive changes again. And so this goes until the day comes when the antibiotic not only does not kill off the ones that are there, but they start to spread from the intestines to the liver, the kidneys, the lungs. Now they change in what was one form of bacteria with one particular design and function in the intestine through a pleomorphism has changed its energy to where it's a mycobacteria in the lungs causing an infection. And or it becomes another bacteria in the brain or another bacteria in the chest muscles. That is the unique quality of a bacteria. Now, science has known this. We've also known about jumping genes and pleomorphism for a long time. The fact that we have an awareness of something does not mean that we honor it in the process of our day-to-day lives. So, what we clearly understood from cattle and pigs and sheep, that they were dying at a faster rate from things called cancer eye. That is not cancer of the eye. It means that there's a local cancer somewhere on the body. And there were a greater number of downer cows, meaning they just drop down and die. And they did not take the time to do pathology exams on each of these downer cows. Why? Because there was an industry for it. Dog food, cat food, and byproducts. Everything for gelatin capsules to skin could be made from that downer cow. Nothing was wasted. So you have an entire industry called the rendering industry that takes diseased, dead, drugged, and damaged goods and turns them into commercial products. Well, on one hand, the commercial industry says, good for you, job well done. On the other end of the spectrum, science was not looking at this, as science is highly myopic. In fact, almost all values and belief systems are myopic. They do not see the broader picture. They do not connect the dots. So now people are consuming meat at a greater level. Why? Because of the advocates of a high-protein diet. Arguably the most dangerous eating program in American history. I would rather see people eat junk food than meat food. Meat would do you in quicker because of the drugging of the animals, the genetic alteration of the animals, and those expressed gene changes then are absorbed into your tissue, in the genome of your tissue, and become your DNA. So understand something. Every time you have a hot dog, a hamburger, kosher, belosher, nonsense, the same drugging, the same stupid process occurs to everyone. But if you want to believe it's different, hey, everybody can believe in their own illusions and delusions. I'm not stopping you from that. If you think, however, for one second that you're getting a healthier animal, you think again. And if anyone would like to debate me on this issue, by all means, please do. But don't come with your religion. Come with facts. I'm only too happy to deal in facts. I can't deal in ideological challenges because that's what's caused the world to kill each other for the last thousands of years. And we'll continue to do so irrespective of facts or truth, which are absolutely the first casualties in all these. So when I see people saying, well, in the name of this, I'm doing this, I say, well, okay, that's fine. When you get cancer and heart disease, when you get dementia, when your brain is rotting and your lungs are on inflamed, when your intestine is filled with disease microorganisms, when your kidney can't process fluids anymore, when your heart is got myopathy, are you going to then say, gee, I take responsibility for this because of the first decision I made led to the second, third, and 50th? No. No, we don't go that way. We're not that responsible or that mature. We just can't handle that. Instead, we say, I don't know why I got sick. Couldn't be anything I did, could it? I wouldn't be that stupid. Well, think again. Every time you eat any meat, you are producing disease. The fact that you don't drop over dead today is of secondary consideration. I don't care if the Pope or Christ incarnate came down and blessed that meat. It is still a diseased, dead piece of flesh that does not deserve to be in any human soul and will not enhance any of our functions. All it does is cause a process that is inevitable. It's just that we don't know when and to what degree it will cause that, just like antibiotics. We don't know whether you're going to get an infection of the lung that you'll die from. We don't know whether or not you're going to get chronic digestive difficulty from the antibiotic, but we do know that you will get something because there is no such thing as non-cause and effect. Every single thing you do in life, including doing nothing, which is an act of choice, causes an effect. Some effects are minor, some are constructive, some are positive, some are enlightening, some are destructive. So ask yourself, what do you want to have happen? Do you want something good, something bad, something painful, now, later, in installments? You can make a Chinese menu. I want to get sick, but not today. I'm already depressed, so I'll take arthritis. Check arthritis, but I want it over a 10-year period. I can complain a lot. Give me non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. I realize this Russian roulette, just like Christopher Walken in The Deer Hunter. I may make the money through my redemption of my pain today, but sooner or later the bullet's going in the head. So let me check off that. I'll take. How about gaining weight? All right. Let's gain some weight. Let's get apathetic. Let's get morose. Let's get negative. Let's get toxic. You don't think we do that? Of course we do it. It's just that we don't want to acknowledge we do it, because what we don't do causes that to be the effect of not making a right choice. When you don't make a right choice, automatically you make a wrong choice. The key is when you see that it's not the right choice, that instantaneously means you have an opportunity to change. If we don't try to redeem ourselves through our ego, we can change. If the ego gets in the way, then we're not going to change. Even when it's in our best interest, we won't change. So when the farmers knew, absolutely knew, that this was not a healthy thing for their animals, because they saw what it was doing to the animals. They saw that they didn't have to keep their animals as clean in their environment because antibiotics were said to, quote, prevent disease. I've visited farm lots where the manure was clear up the back end of the animals. They were standing in this. I've seen farmers break the tails of their cows so that the cows couldn't sit down, feed them on conveyor belts 24 hours a day with arc light on, giving them growth-stimulating hormones, antibiotic tranquilizers, and other drugs, all to get them to market quicker. NASA, one of those people, Are you a spiritual person? Of course, I'm a Christian or I'm a something. Do you believe in ethics? Of course I do. What's the ethics of feeding those animals something that you wouldn't feed yourself? Would you feed yourself all those antibiotics, growth-stimulating hormones, tranquilizers? Would you break the coccyx bone in your bottom of your spine so you couldn't sit down? Would you keep all the lights in your house on and eat 24 hours a day? Well, of course not. Why not? Well, that'd kill me. Well, what's it doing to your cattle? Your cattle's liver are 3 times normal size. They're diseased. Well, that's a cow. Doesn't have a spirit. How do you know? No human being knows. So who then has a right to say that doesn't exist? Do you have a dog? Of course. You treat your dog all right? Well, yeah. Why don't you cook your dog up and have it for dinner tonight? Just take off the flea collar, but otherwise it's all edible. Well, no. Well, then let me kill your dog. Eat it. Let me kill your cat and eat it. No? Why not? Then what's the difference between a lamb and a goat? Your dog or cat? Now, don't go ask no stupid questions, because I have never been conditioned to think in that way. Now, I realize you've seen too many Manchurian Candidate films. What we're dealing with here is people who selectively become dysfunctional when they choose to, but otherwise are completely rational. They're just not reasonable in their rationality. Linear does not mean progressive. It just means that there is a step-by-step notion that if I do this, I get this. You're looking for profit, so you do what gives you a profit. You're not considering the ethic or what it does to the human health of all the people who are having to eat this, trusting that this is a safe piece of meat. But the USDA guarantees. Guarantees what? I've been on the lines. Have you ever seen how fast a piece of meat goes through the lines? Inspectors are overwhelmed. Corruption is rampant. Bribes are given out left and right. And even when they do take a sample of 1 in 10,000 pieces of meat, by the time it comes back from the lab, that piece of meat has already been eaten by someone. So what do they have? That there was high E. coli? Well, now it's an E. coli in someone's body. Nice system there. So, what do we learn from this? Well, take a look at AIDS. I was at Trafalgar Hospital and the Institute of Applied Biology associated with Trafalgar Hospital when I was asked to take a look at a group of young men, average age 17. These individuals were coming into the clinic there with a series of unusual illnesses, wasting illness, some lymphomas. And when we asked for a full series of workups, some of the other docs says, why? Well, I'm kind of curious about this. We started seeing they had syphilis, gonorrhea, hepatitis, herpes. They had everything, every virus and bacteria you can imagine. They also had been taking antibiotics daily by the handful. And they were also on drugs daily. They were malnourished. They were dehydrated. And here they were, not even out of their teens and already showing the symptoms of advanced pathological age. Now, it was not any one of those that was causing them to end up hospitalized or dying. It was a combination in the false belief that as long as they took these antibiotics, they wouldn't end up with these sexually transmitted diseases or other diseases. They did. It was a myth. And they weren't paying attention to what they were eating, but they were paying a great deal of attention with great concern and great focus and clarity of mind on the state of altered reality they were trying to achieve. Well, they achieved it at a cost. A lot of them didn't make it. A lot of them ended up dead. It's interesting to look at someone that you're sitting across from at 1 in the afternoon, 5 in the evening, they're dead. Now you're looking at a toe tag as they're being put into a meat box in a morgue. What lesson weren't they given? What lesson didn't they seek? What lesson didn't they learn? Go to the discos in the 1970s and 80s. Now the scene had changed, and it was cocaine, ecstasy, KY jelly, massive amounts of antibiotics by the handfuls. Those were the people suffering then from a special kind of bowel disease, where enormous percentage of the men were having to wear pads, pee pads, because they had lost their sphincter control, and they would be leaking debris into their underwear all day long. In fact, one of them I was sitting in council one day, and this terrible odor occurred, and I asked, what was the odor? And the guy said, I'm sorry, but I haven't changed this. And then he explained he had changed it 5 or 6 times a day. Side effect. I said, have you done any cultures? No. Why do you do this? Because it feels good. Well, how can you do it that often and have it feel good? You've got to be rupturing stuff. Why take the drugs? What drugs? Amyl nitrate. How many times? 10, 15, 20 times. So I went to the literature and I showed him. I said, you realize that Kaposi sarcoma is a direct side effect of amyl nitrate use. No, I didn't know that. All right, here it is. Every single time you take a popper, you are absolutely destroying your immune system. Didn't matter. It's very hard to compete with anything that has taken a person away from that which is predictable and common to that which in their mind is euphoric. And drugs create a euphoria that makes it so tempting for them to go to when they're looking at the rest of their life that does not offer that euphoria. Troubled relationships with oneself and the world around them, interpersonal dynamics, lead us to escape someplace that feels better than where we're at. People use different methods and go to different places. Some into a mall, some into a bar, some into a state of depression, self-inflicted. And it's unfortunate because medicine is right there, especially psychiatrists say, it's not a moral issue, it's not an interpersonal issue, it's not an emotional issue, it's not a circumstantial issue, it's not a condition issue. No, it's organic brain dysfunction. Oh, thank God. Get me some of it. Antibiotics in cattle food. Tranquilizers in human food. Vaccines for everyone. Does any of this sound a bit strange? It does if you're not participating in it. It doesn't if you are. Just remember this. There is no such thing on earth as a healthy or clean piece of meat. But Gary, if you soak it in salt water and have it blessed, blessed, smashed up your best, that does not change. You want a little lesson in life? Come into the laboratory. Let me put under a slide that piece of cleaned, drained meat, and I'll show you enough bacteria you could kill an elephant with. You do not ever, it is not humanly possible, it's not technologically possible to draw the blood out of tissue. Salt will only deal with the superficial blood. Draining vein blood is only a relatively small percentage of the total blood in a carcass. Let me tell you a little background in microbiology. The moment your immune system ceases, that's at death, you create a traumatic and psychic shock. The life force, if it's been terminated prematurely and not through its own natural evolution, goes into a shock. That creates a crisis in the energy that is in the body, and the immune system ceases. So all those trillions of natural immune responders are gone. All that's left is the enemy. All the pathological bacteria, viruses, parasites, microbes, fungi, all of that now says, hey, the bars are off the window, the windows are open, the jewelry's there to be taken. It begins a process of ravaging the tissue. Why do you think after someone dies, you got to get them in the ground quickly? for no other reason than they rot. They rot because, just like a banana that's overripe, a corpse is overripe. There's no difference. They are both inert at that point. Their life force is gone. Now, enzymes take over in the fruit, bacteria in the human. Starts decomposing flesh. There was a time when people had no way of storing their food when they traveled long distances. So what they did, they got into the habit of doing jerks. A jerk is a piece of meat. At that time, it was generally venison, deer, but they also did squirrels and rabbits and muskrats and beaver. Things that were relatively small, they would put them over a slow-burning ambers, generally hickory, and they would baste them with a big basting brush and with salt water. The salt would draw out the moisture and shrink the tissue. You could take a 300-pound deer and dress it down and smoke it down to about 50 pounds. So you could eliminate almost 70% of its total volume, which was water, about the same in the human, 74% in the human. Now they would baste it in honey, which is a natural preservative. Honey is the only food in the world that does not go bad, ever. You could eat honey that was 5,000 years old. Now they baste it in honey as a preservative, but there is a misnomer here. The honey only preserved what was on the outside surface skin. It did not preserve the microorganisms on the inside. You have both anaerobic and aerobic microorganisms. So now when they were going on those Conestoga wagons and covered wagons across the Great Divide, where they'd have no food and generally very few trading posts, they had to take virtually all their provisions with them. Now, they could take nothing that was fresh because there was nothing that would last. So they had to take everything that was dried. So they generally took salt, flour, a lard, and their jerky. They suffered generally from gross dysentery, and most people died of bacterial infections and polluted water. Because even though those streams or river look refreshing and good, they had what was called beaver fever. An animal that defecates in the water, and all animals defecate in the water, the entire water becomes polluted. One moose could pollute a 5-acre lake with one bowel movement because of the dispersion factor. You have more bacteria in your body than you have cells, and you have 100 trillion cells. By 100 factor, that's how much bacteria you have. Now, these people were getting sick, and they had no medicines. Interestingly enough, the Native Americans around them frequently helped them. They would cut out the adrenal glands of rabbits and give it to them. Well, they gave them vitamin C, because that's the largest repository of vitamin C in the body. They would give them nettles and boil the nettles. That would give them ascorbic acid. That kept them from getting scurvy. And the jerky, they would throw into a bucket and rehydrate it, and that would give them a stew if they took some starchy vegetables with them. Today, we go into a restaurant, and we don't want something that's tough. Nobody would buy it. You want something tender. So we advertise tender beef, tender loins, baby lamb, milk-fed veal. And for a long time, and still today, we have prime aged beef. Aging the beef merely means that by changing the temperature in the room, they speed up gross deterioration of the tissue and then cool it, and it slows it down, speed it up, slow it down. They generally chemically treat this because the odor of a carcass rotting is horrific. And if you've ever been around where there's a dead rat or a dead animal, you know it. You smell it. Well, imagine a dead human. They smell about the same. So you can chemically treat this with something that's similar to an industrial cleaning solvent. People wouldn't eat meat if it's purple because the blood is oxidized, and gray and that's what the color of meat is, so they treat it with sodium nitrite. It holds a red color in it. People think they're getting something red. Red is what? Red is blood. In point of fact, in even the most salt-treated piece of meat, you still have 60% of the blood in the tissue. You can't get it out. Because once the animal dies, shock stops the drainage process, and it traps that through a gross localized edema. And in that little pool of blood inside each of those cells, bacteria thrive. All we can do then is say, well, we have 10 million parts of bacteria per drop of blood, so let's allow that much in human consumption. So the myth is that we have clean, healthy meat. Organic or not, there is no such thing. Only an animal with a highly acidic system and a very short intestine is able to take that meat and to digest it so that it can kill the pathogenic activity. We cannot. We have an alkaline medium. We have a long intestine. We have a long transit time. And that meat is doing a lot of damage inside of our system. Blessed or not is immaterial. It's still fed the same, growth-stimulating antibiotics, hormones. So if you don't mind having your body chemically lobotomized, your genes potentially altered, your chromosomes damaged, then eat meat. But understand what you're eating, and for those of you who can't wait for that tender piece of meat, remember, it's only tender, A, because they've used monosodium glutamate, or B, because it's in an advanced state of putrefaction, which means rotting. Now, look under the dictionary under ghoul, and then ask yourself, how does it fit you? Someone who would rip the flesh from a dead animal that is putrefied and rotting with blood, bacteria, pus, and visceral material. The least of all is this little bacteria that has managed to do what all of our best scientists could not, defend itself. Now it's defending itself so well that you have destroyed the capacity in your own body by taking in the meat and other foods that are chemically altered to defend yourself. And instead of simply saying, hey, we want to prevent these bacteria from getting there in the first place, let's clean up our food supply. Let's clean up our diets. Let's start doing things that naturally build the immune resistance. So when we do come into contact with the bacteria, we'll be able to fight it and kill it and live. But why do that? There's no money in it. There's no grants. There's none of the stuff that makes us feel kind of mushy inside when we get a special grant, knowing that our whole life is a fraud, as most of science and food is today. Take a careful look, but beware. If you say you want the truth, don't get too close to it. Because what we call the truth is almost always a deception. And when it comes to nutrition, it's a total deception. There's nothing that the FDA has ever said that's been honest, or the USDA, concerning what our needs are when it comes to our dietary intake. And yet, the average person will use that as an excuse. Well, if it was bad, No. Don't look for someone wise to help you. Dr. Curry Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the PCR, in an interview I did with him, recently said, Gary, we're all waiting for those group of wise men and women somewhere to come forward and to save us. They don't exist. They're not going to save us. He's one of those wise people. And other wise people I've spoken to also say, where we're looking, we're not going to find them. I'm Gary Nall. Think of that when you go into a hospital. Fluoride and apoptosis. Thank you, Carol Koff, for sending me this. This comes from a publication, A Letter to the British Medical Journal, by Corey Minier and Dr. Joseph McCurl. When apoptosis, or programmed cell death, was first identified as a cellular function in 1972, water fluoridation in the United States had already been around for over 20 years. Several years ago, fluoride F was found to induce apoptosis, joining a list of other apoptosis-inducing substances such as radiation, mercury, and anti-cancer drugs. The mechanism of action is likely through activation of enzyme capase 3. Although these discoveries may be important in the development of pharmacological agents to treat cancer or other diseases, it should cause a great deal of concern regarding current levels of fluoride exposure. While fluoride has long been known to be highly toxic, we find it most disturbing that it acts through apoptosis rather than necrosis, since the former requires genetic interference. As researchers stated last year, even though fluoride toxicity is increasingly being considered to be important, very little information is available on the mechanism of action of fluoride. Now, since apoptosis, or programmed cell death, is potentially implicated in the development of neurological disorders like autism, Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, Parkinson's, this lack of understanding is concerning. A logical question would be if pregnant women consuming large amounts of fluoride will be increasing their unborn child's risk of autism. While this is unproven, it is biologically possible, especially considering the vital role of apoptosis in embryogenesis. And this is especially relevant when one considers the fact that any benefit of water fluoridation in reducing dental caries is minuscule at best. In 1990, researchers from the National Institutes of Dental Research in the United States performed an epidemiological study and declared, quote, "The results suggest that water fluoridation has played a dominant role in the decline in caries and must continue to be a major preventative methodology," unquote. However, a closer look at the study shows that the conclusion is not supported by the actual data. The difference in tooth decay was actually found to be 0.6 decayed, missing, or filled surfaces. In other words, the tremendous benefit of fluoridation amounted to about one half of a single surface out of a total number of 128 surfaces. That's less than 0.5 difference. In addition, it's doubtful whether such a small difference is even statistically significant. In point of fact, it is not. So what's this mean? It means that one of the ways we may be causing ourselves to get sick and die and get diseased today is simply drinking water that is fluoridated. Are you drinking water that's fluoridated? If you live where you can hear my voice, you are. This comes from Edward Stone. Thank you, Edward. The source, Whitley Stryber's Unknown Country. New Navy sonar could be the end of whales. For the last several years, the U.S. Navy has been making plans to deploy low-frequency active sonar, a new extended-range submarine detection system that will create noise billions of times more intense than before in the world's oceans. The National Marine Fisheries Service has proposed issuing a permit that would allow the Navy to proceed with this development and deployment, and in the process to harass, injure, and even kill marine mammals by flooding the ocean with sound. The Navy wants to use this to deploy a global surveillance system to hunt for a new generation of silent enemy submarines. But marine scientists and environmentalists are fighting the proposal, saying it would prove lethal to whales and other marine mammals. The Navy has used sonar to hunt for submarines for decades. Undeniable evidence that high-powered sonar systems kill marine mammals emerged in March 2000 when beach strandings of four different species of whales and dolphins in the Bahamas coincided with the Navy battle group's use of extremely loud active sonar there. Kenneth Balcom of the Center for Whale Research in Friday Harbor, Washington, concludes that some whales died from a vibration in their cranial air spaces that tore delicate tissue around the brain and ears. The sonar could cause the same damage, he believes. Despite efforts to save the whales, seven of them died. The National Marine Fisheries Service and the Navy investigated to establish a connection between the strandings and the sonar. Well, there's another thing certainly worthy of our putting our attention to. And finally, this comes, and then I'll take some calls, from Patricia Neal Warren, published in ANU Magazine. I'll quote, "Suddenly corruption is a national issue. with Americans outraged over election misdeeds and marching on Washington for the presidential inauguration. For three centuries, we've sat in our mansion of democracy, admiring the antique carpet of election practice that graced our floor. Suddenly, on November 7th, the corner of the rug blew up in the wind, and everybody was forced to see all the moss, mold, dirt, and cockroaches underneath. Black people protested over racial profiling at the polls. Will America leave the election dirt where it is, or yank the carpet and clean house? Americans like to point fingers at graft in Bahamian republics. Well, we're no slouches. Historic examples, Bureau of Indian Affairs corruption, Tammany Hall corruption, Watergate corruption. But our idealism about ourselves means that we're usually in deep denial about our own graft, whereas most countries cheerfully acknowledge theirs. Indeed, corruption is such a moneymaker for U.S. government business, so hardwired into daily life that some Americans refuse to see it for what it is. Nowhere in our society is conflict of interest so legitimized as in biomedical research and marketing. Recent editorials in the Science Press admit the problem is rampant. Numbers of scientists, government officials, and corporations allegedly feel free to engage openly in paid activities that would destroy the public's trust in them overnight if they were counting votes in Florida. This is especially true for AIDS, the most politicized disease in history. My October column, Science for Sale, sparked letters from scientists, journalists, and readers who share my concerns. But most Americans still don't know what's under the AIDS rug. Supposedly, the media are watchdogs for our mansion of democracy. So the major media should be up in arms about AIDS corruption. After all, it can result in death or injury for unwitting patients. But the issues I raise in my column are not breaking news. They were raised a decade ago or more. Glimpses under the rug were already offered by pioneering investigative journalists, including John Larson and Nina Ostrom, and Business Week senior writer Bruce Nussbaum. And Nussbaum's 1990 book called Good Intentions describes how an old drug called AZT, deemed ineffective for treating cancer, was pulled off the shelf for AIDS and fast-laned into people's bodies through FDA and corporate good old boying. Today, these issues are still mostly ignored by major media. I've tried to imagine Washington Post reporters Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein being similarly ignored when they lifted the Watergate rug in the 1970s. Owned by big corporations, many media today are vulnerable to government jawboning and run a lot of high-priced drug and medical advertising. So perhaps they're reluctant to bite the hand that feeds them. Only lately are a few publications peeking under the rug. The LA Times and USA Today have run exposés alleging FDA corruption and mismanagement, while the Washington Post spotlighted high prices on AIDS drugs. In fiction, there's Charles Ortlieb's riveting bestseller, The Closing Argument, about a black lawyer who puts HIV science on trial. And while major media swung the spotlight to Kathleen Harris's efforts to quash vote recounts in Florida, there was no spotlight on Immune Response's efforts to quash a study unfavorable to its AIDS drug. Science medical dirt is often ignored in the gay world, too. Starting in the mid-1980s, gay journalist Lawrenson pointed out flaws in AIDS statistics and clinical data. In his 1993 book, The AIDS War, he describes how gay AIDS infrastructure was risking compromise and harm to patients by its growing dependence on government money and pharmaceutical grants and sponsorships. He says he was ostracized, slandered, and blacklisted in the gay world. Today, despite these and other pioneering investigations, it's still business as usual in most gay AIDS infrastructure. Most gay people aren't asking publicly whether dependence on government and corporate funding includes freedom to question any items of AIDS policy. Many gay media follow suit by sticking to standard AIDS ideology. While they insist that their advertisers don't dictate editorial policy, one can't help noticing that many gay media are top-heavy with AIDS advertising. As I write this, most of them still ignore a big breaking story in the U.S. government reverses itself on hit hard, hit early. According to the December 16th issue of The New Scientist, that treatment route has proven too risky because of severe side effects. ABC Nightly News medical correspondent Nick Rugas expressed outrage at the human cost of this policy and called for congressional investigation. The perceived need to manage gay public opinion can be understood when we see that gay disposable income is a cash cow. According to AIDS mogul William Hastline, it cost around $500 million to develop a drug today. The standard figure for gay male treatment is $16,000 a year. But one pharmaceutical company admits that 50% of long-term HIV patients taking protease inhibitors pay extra for managing abnormal fat depositions and metabolic abnormalities, up to $7,369 for the first year of treatment per symptom. So if we use a round figure of $20,000 a year, only 25,000 gay male treatment years are needed to put a new drug into the black. Men's money seems subsidizes gays marketing abroad. While many U.S. gay and bisexual men continue to pay top dollar for the latest drug, some corporations give free drugs to developing countries. Corporate medical government coziness is also unabashedly visible in the mainstream world. The body's website is wallpapered with pharmaceutical logos. 12 companies sponsor the site. As AIDS policy penetrates the black community, the ballyhooed new African American AIDS Policy and Training Institute is sponsored by the CDC and 7 drug companies. But most Americans don't openly question such alliances, which would inspire marches on Washington if Republicans or Democrats did them. Yes, election dirt is now visible in glaring daylight because enough Americans are fighting mad about it. But not enough Americans are angry about allegations of biomedical dirt. It remains to be seen whether the current media exposes the scientific medical issues under the rug also. For further reading, Good Intentions by Bruce Nussbaum, AIDS War, John Lawrenson, The Closing Argument by Charles Ortlieb. Unquote. I'm Gary Nall. Those are just some of the issues. And the meaning of all that was, we have not, as a society, taken the effort to see how the pharmaceutical industries have virtually controlled all AIDS information. By being the number one contributor to all the different AIDS foundations and the government co-sponsored programs and the international AIDS conferences, there's no dissenting opinions that are allowed. In fact, if you doubt that, then you should have been with me at the last symposium where a group of highly credentialed professors in virology and microbiology simply very politely went to a microphone to ask a panel, including Robert Gallo and Dr. Hu and others, and they were dismissed. I mean, just said, we're not answering. Every single booth there was from a pharmaceutical company. Every single one. They sponsored it. They control it. Gross conflict of interest. Science for hire. Foundations for hire. And we haven't paid attention to that yet. In time, hopefully we will. Let's go to the phone, see who's on the line. Hi, what's your name, please?
Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
I'm Sheila, Gary. Thank you very much for all the information all these years. I'm calling because as a child, I had a lot of cavities. Of course, I did drink the tap water. But for the past 25 to 30 years, I've been on spring water and now on distilled. The problem that I'm having now is the fact that my teeth are slowly... at first, I get an abscess, the teeth loosens, I go to the dentist, they pull them out. It's happening again. I got rid of the abscess by taking about 800 milligrams of the CoQ10, and I added about 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. But I still can't get my face has gone down. But inside of my gum, I cannot get that swelling to go completely down. Whenever I stop taking the CoQ10 or I decrease it, I feel a little slight pain and the swelling starts again.
Let's take a look at this step by step and see what we can come up with, all right? Now, do not allow another tooth to be taken out because of an abscess.
I don't want to.
Okay, well, would you... Remember, you hire the dentist. The dentist works for you.
Right.
Like it or not, they're a high-paid employee. When pus accumulates in your tissue, in any space that it cannot get out, it causes an infection.
Yes.
The infection then is called an abscess. So abscesses can be either external or internal. And generally an abscess only comes when our immune system is lowered.
Okay.
Do you follow me?
I do.
Okay. Now, the infected part becomes generally inflamed and swollen, and if you touch it, it's very tender to the touch. But also what will come in most individuals, the first thing is fatigue, because the body has to conserve its energy. You cannot be expending energy and at the same time have a massive infection, because the energy, the chi, the life force is going into fighting this infection. And therefore is not available for the normal activity, so we have to slow down. We also have to conserve our energy and keep it focused. Hence, we generally lose our appetite, mm-hmm. and we'll start to lose some weight. The body will start to go through generally some chills and spiked fever. That's showing that there is a serious infection, and the body's trying to kill it by raising the body temperature, which generally is pretty effective. Now, if you get an infection in the brain, or in the gastrointestinal walls, or in your ears, or in your breast, or your prostate gland, it can be serious. And these infections can be made up of bacteria, viruses, parasites, or fungi. So anything that we've done into our life up to that point has contributed to it. You're following me?
Yes.
So now do you see how your lifestyle has contributed to an infection?
Yes.
All right. That's the first step. Acknowledgement of what we've done, not to beat up on ourselves, not to condemn ourselves, just to be aware of this connection. That's the first step.
I'm there.
The second step is we have to reverse this process. We have to get cleaner than clean.
Okay.
You cannot do anything 99% and succeed. You must do it 100%+. You cannot have sugar in any form.
Okay.
You cannot have any carbohydrates that are processed, no animal products, no dairy. No caffeine. Clear on that?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not about, well, my comfort. No, no comfort here.
No problem.
You've got to be serious about this. Then once you do that, then you have to start a detoxification process. Saunas are very good. Control the time that you're in the sauna. You start by hydrating and then taking some ice water. In the sauna, you start with 10 minutes. You watch your blood pressure and... make sure you don't have any congestive heart failure or anything that would preclude a sauna so that you can start the sauna. The sauna is one of the best deep cell cleansing that you can do. You want to get a colonic, but don't do what some of the people are doing or getting multiple colonics all at once. It's very dangerous. It'll throw electrolytes out of the system, upset normal peristalsis. You get one colonic per every 3 months. Clear on that. All right? Make sure that you get an ozonated colonic with ozone and that all of the attachments are disposable. Watch to see that they're taken out of the sterilized plastic yourself. Don't let someone say, oh, yeah, they're new. No. Mm-hmm. If they're new, show me they're new. I want to see them coming out of a package. I don't want anything that could infect me on any level.
Okay.
Next, you want to do some really serious drinking of water.
Oh, boy.
You want to overhydrate the body, generally a gallon to a gallon and a half per day.
Oh, boy.
And then you want to start juices. You want to start gradually, and then you start gradually building up, and you want to go towards the dark green vegetables diluted with aloe vera.
Okay.
And acidophilus.
Right.
It's very important you have acidophilus. Then you want to start, that gets your second stage of cleansing. Then you want to do intravenous ozone, which will help you with your deep viruses in the tissue. And if your dentist is a holistic dentist, and I'm assuming that you have not seen one because they wouldn't be pulling these teeth,
right?
See Dr. Elmira Goddard or Dr. Joseph Joe Greer or Dr. They can use localized ozone around the tissue, which will kill deep bacteria. Then you want to gargle with colloidal silver, and that will help as well. You'll want zinc in the diet because it's a powerful immune modulator.
Right.
You also want garlic at least 5 times a day. Yes, you may get some gas. If you start getting gas from either the juices or garlic, take 4 or 5 charcoal capsules, which will trap the gas. Mm-hmm. You'll want to take superoxide dismutase because you're going to want as much antioxidant activity as possible.
What is that?
You want vitamin A at least for 1 week at about 100,000 units and build it down to 50,000 for the next week and then down to 25,000 the week after that because it strengthens the cell's wall to protect the invasion of bacteria and promotes tissue repair in the mouth.
Okay.
You want to take a natural carotenoid complex because that helps repair damage and it has strong antiviral and antibacterial. You'll want to take vitamin C, which is the number one thing for your immune system and tissue repair. Vitamin E for oxidation, germanium, which enhances immune function, proteolytic enzymes, and I would go heavy upon burdock root, cayenne for blood cleansing, dandelion root, red clover, and yellow dock for healing.
Okay.
And milk thistle, taken in capsule form, is good for cleansing the bloodstream. Got it?
Burdock, yellow dock. What are the other?
Red clover.
Red clover.
Okay.
Yes.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, Gary.
Bye. I'm Gary Nall. That's all the time we have. Thank you all very much for listening. I'll look forward to sharing more with you tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.